Chapter 7. Majid or Milat. But which son to send? First, it had to be Majid. He was intelligent and doing well at school. He would learn the language quicker. And Milat was the best footballer Willesden Football Club's under-15s had ever seen. So Samad began stealing Majid's clothes away and got him a different passport. He would be travelling with Auntie Zinat on the 4th of November. But the next week he changed his mind and decided it was Milat because Majid was really Samad's favourite and he wanted to watch him grow older. Milat was becoming wild and corrupted and he needed more teaching. Milat was trouble, so now his clothes were taken and his passport arranged. But then Poppy Burt Jones suddenly said that she had dreamed that it was Majid. Now Samad did not know what to do, so Archie decided for him. He flipped a coin in O'Connell's. Majid would go. But the word kidnap was never used. Samad knew that he had arranged a 3 a.m. flight and that he had not told Alsana anything, but he did not connect these two facts. So he was surprised when he came home to a crying Alsana at 2 a.m. on the 31st of October, 1984. He did not think, "Ah, she has discovered what I am about to do with Majid." It was now, finally and forever, Majid. Because he did not think taking Majid was kidnap. Instead, he thought, "She knows about Poppy." And because this is what the guilty do in these situations, he attacked first. "So, I must come home to this, must I?" he said, and he threw his bag on the ground. "I spend all night in that bloody restaurant, and I have to come back to you crying?" Alsana began to cry harder, and then she pointed at the radio. Samad moved over and turned it up. "This is the BBC World Service at 0300 hours. Mrs. Indira Gandhi, Prime Minister of India, was shot today as she walked in the garden of her New Delhi home." "Enough," said Samad, switching it off. And as he continued speaking, he wondered why he was so angry. "She was no bloody good anyway, and who cares what happens in India? You really are stupid. Would you cry for me like that if I died? You care more for some corrupt politician who you've never met." "You stupid man," Alsana shouted back at him. "I am not crying for her. I am crying for my friends. There will be blood on the streets back home because of this, in India and Bangladesh. I am so happy that my children are here and not there. They will not die on the streets like rats." "No, something much worse will happen to them in a corrupt country with a mother who is going mad. Look how fat you are. You have forgotten where you came from. We never see family anymore because you make me feel shame. Why did you go all the way to Bengal for a wife?" they will ask. "Why didn't you just go to Birmingham?" "I tell you, those boys would have a better life back home than they ever..." "Don't you even begin," screamed Alsana. "It will be over my dead body that this family moves back to a place where we are in danger. What are you planning, Samad?" "I phoned Ardashir. He said you've been leaving work at 11:30. It is now 2 in the morning. I am not mad." At that moment, Samad hit Alsana, and then she punched him hard in the stomach before running out into the garden, where Samad caught her by the waist and pulled her down onto the grass. They caught hold of each other's hair and started kicking each other. Around this time, the twins appeared, half awake from their beds, and stood at the long glass window. "Dad," said Majid after a moment. "Definitely Dad."
"No way, man," said Milat.
"I bet you all my sweets that Mum wins."
"Ooh,"
cried the twins together. Then,
"Ah!"
Alsana had just ended the fight with a little help from the garden fork.
"Now maybe some of us who have to work in the morning can get a good night's sleep," shouted a neighbour. "Bloody packies."
A few minutes later, Samad put his hands on his son's dark heads and told them to go to bed. When he reached the bedroom door, he stopped. "You'll thank me in the end," he said, turning to Majid, who smiled politely, not understanding him. "This country is no good." Then he walked up the stairs and phoned Poppy Burt Jones to tell her that he could not see her anymore. They were finished. After she woke up to find Majid had gone, Alsana stopped giving her husband direct answers. It was not just about the lies or the kidnap. No, what she hated about countries like Bangladesh was just how dangerous they were. At any time, a storm could come and take your house, or an earthquake could send it falling down on top of you. In Bangladesh, life was cheap. And this is what made Alsana most upset, that Majid should learn to treat his life cheaply. Yes, he was probably safe in the Chittagong Hills, the highest part of that very low country, but she still shook as she imagined him walking through water that came up to his waist under heavy black skies. Of course, she spoke to relatives and tried to get him back, but she knew that quietly they agreed with what Samad had done, probably because they were pleased that her family, her husband, who looked like Omar Sharif, and her son, who spoke like Prince Charles, were now as unhappy as everyone else. Even Zinat, who never told Alsana about her part in the kidnap, reached over the table and took her hand. "Oh, Alsie, I just keep thinking what a shame it is that he had to take the good one." And when there was a terrible storm in Bangladesh that May, Alsana felt that everyone was enjoying calling her to tell her about the number of dead bodies in the streets and the houses that had been destroyed. So she had decided to stop speaking directly to her husband. For the next 8 years, she never said yes or no to him. Instead, her answer to everything was, "Maybe, Samad, maybe not." "Alsana," he would ask, "have you seen my newspaper?" "Maybe, Samad, maybe not." Sometimes it nearly made him crazy, but there was no money to bring Majid back anyway, even if he had wanted to. A few weeks after the storm, the Iqbals received a letter from Majid, who was the elder of the twins by 2 minutes. It was carefully written and had a recent photograph inside it. Samad grew excited when he read it aloud to Clara and Alsana, who were in the kitchen drinking tea. Milat was sitting opposite them and did not seem interested in his brother's words. "When the storm happened, a vase of flowers fell down in the mosque and broke my nose. When I grow up, I think vases should be put in safe places. I shall complain about other dangerous things too. See?"
"See what?" asked Clara.
"He does not think stupid things like vases should be in mosques. My boy is going to be great."
"Maybe, Samad, maybe not," replied Alsana.
"Look at his nose. It is big now. He looks like a little Englishman. Look, Milat," said Clara,
and she put the photograph in front of his handsome young face. "You two don't look like twins anymore."
"He looks like a chief," said Milat, after looking at it quickly with his dark eyes. Sama did not know that in teenage street language, chief did not mean leader or great person. It meant fool or stupid person.
"Yes," said Samad. "It is important you understand the difference between you two boys, Milat. I know that your brother will lead others. He will be a great chief, like Pandey."
Milat laughed so hard at this that he fell off his chair and broke his nose against the table. In October 1987, there was a terrible storm in England too. The lights went out, and then a tree came down on the Iqbal's house.
"We must go to Archie's," said Samad. "Maybe they still have light."
So the family packed and quickly drove round to Archie's house. When they entered, 13-year-old Irie was sitting at the kitchen table, writing in her diary. 8:30 p.m, Milat just walked in. "He's so handsome, but he annoys me. He's wearing the usual tight jeans and doesn't look at me,
except as a friend. I'm in love with a fool. Stupid me. Why isn't he clever like his brother? Oh well, I'm in love. And I'm fat. Storm still crazy. Got to go.
All right, said Milat.
All right, said Irie. Dad's gone mad. The house is really damaged.
Still, we're safe here,
said Archie, bringing in some long pieces of wood and placing them over the window.
This is the safest house in Willesden.
Yes, said Samad. We know what we're doing. Once you've driven a tank in the war, a storm is nothing.
Someone tell a story, said Alsana, or this is going to be really boring.
So Samad began to tell them, yet again, the story of Mangal Pandey. But Archie had recently been reading a newspaper article about Pandey, and he began to argue that Pandey had been drunk when he had shot that first bullet. Then Archie took out the article to prove it. As Samad and Archie began shouting at each other, Milat and Irie quietly left the house and walked into Willesden Park.
This is incredible, shouted Milat through the wind.
Yeah, it's crazy, said Irie.
You're crazy, shouted Milat.
What do you mean? I'm fine.
No, you're not, shouted Milat. You're always looking at me. And what were you writing then? I know you fancy me.
I do not fancy you.
You fancy me. But it's no good. You're getting a bit big. I don't like big. You can't have me.
I don't want you, said Irie.
You love yourself. You've got a big nose and you're trouble.
Well, enjoy, said Milat. And just for a moment, he moved towards her and kissed her very quickly on the mouth, then stepped back.
Because that is all the trouble you're getting.